Most of you will remember the time troll. I want to continue with part two of what we began last week on Daniel. Tremendous Old Testament hero. We've gathered today for a purpose. Part of that purpose that we are endeavoring for today is that we might prepare for the day and the time when we're going to face Jesus. That day of judgment, when we'll give an account for all things. He will present us, his bride, complete, spotless, mature in him to his Father. So what's going on today is that we are becoming that bride. As more get saved, the bride continues to expand. In that day, Jesus will either be proud of you or ashamed of you. There's no center of the road. Only you can determine which one he will be. You will be there. And he will judge righteously. So that's what we're doing here today. As a part of that, we've been looking at the life of Daniel these last couple of weeks. Daniel, probably more than anybody other than Joseph, is popular beyond belief, especially to young men. He went all the way through his life living for God under tremendously difficult circumstances. And we picked out probably the two greatest or largest or hardest temptations that he would face. Now, you have to understand, he was in exile. He wasn't with his mom and dad. He was not even in his own home country. Jerusalem had become so vile, so anti-God, so idolatrous, that God literally had to judge them. And he said through Ezekiel in chapter 14, verse 14, even if these three men were in Jerusalem, Noah, Daniel, and Job, they would only be able to deliver themselves. They wouldn't be able to help the city. That's pretty bad. When men of that stature and that faith would not be able to help the city. So because of that, Babylon was allowed to come in and ravage Jerusalem and defeat it. And then they took all the precious treasures from the temple, yes, or the synagogue, and the choicest of all the young men. Four of those young men were Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The greatest and first temptation upon entering into Babylon that these four young men faced. Daniel was kind of the spokesman. That first temptation, and that's point one on your outline. They were smart. They were physically strong. Their mind was sharp and alert. They had good character. So they had been chosen. And the king gave orders. All the young men that have been chosen, and there must have been several dozen, they will eat at my table of what I eat. And Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, no, that's okay. They were telling the guy that was in charge, you let us eat what we want to eat. We don't want to eat that. And the guy said, don't you realize I'll get killed if anything happens? You wanted me to put my life on the line for your eating habits. And they said, well, let us try it for just a little while. And if we don't meet your standards, then we'll eat whatever you want. And the agreement was made. You know the story. The young men prospered. There's a lot of different ways that could have gone. It went the best way that it possibly could. There was a marked difference between them and the others. So that brings us to a second temptation. That's point number two. The second temptation. Much later in life. At this point, Daniel was now an aged statesman. Four successive kings. He had been under their rule. They had found that David was a man of such high moral character, such courage, and such ability. Although he was a Hebrew, they found, all four of these kings found that he was indispensable for the administration of the empire. It was so vast, it was so large. He was necessary. Daniel served under Nebuchadnezzar also. He was one of the kings, the first. It took courage for that young exile to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel chapter 4 and tell him to his face that he was going to be driven out of his kingdom. And he was going to be out in the fields and literally eat grass like an ox. Now, that's not something you want to tell your king, that by a flick of a finger could have your head lopped off. But Daniel was that kind of young man. He told him, your body will be wet with dew. Your hair is going to grow like eagle's feathers, and your nails will become like bird's claws. In Daniel chapter 4, verse 26. Until you come to the moment when you realize that heaven rules. Everything went well for a little while. Then one day, Nebuchadnezzar was standing on his little outcove for his room, leaning against the banister, and he looks out across the kingdom, which was one of the wonders of the ancient world. And he says, look what my hands have built. And then Shazam. Now that's not a biblical word. That's Lewis 2 and 4. Everything changed. What Daniel had said began to come to pass. That fearless interpretation bore true. And Nebuchadnezzar was banished. And he roamed the hills. Daniel gave the same type of interpretation under the next king, Belshazzar. When during the party, when the festivities got to a crescendo, suddenly a hand appeared and began to write on the wall. Nobody could read it. Belshazzar was so shaken that it said his joints became loose and his knees smote together. Got a feeling mine would have too. The terrified Belshazzar and his drunken lords and concubines, they were at a loss. What does this say? What's going on here? And Daniel stepped forward, and you've heard message after message on it. Mene, mene, tekel upharsin. You've been weighed in the balances and found wanting. And in Daniel chapter 5, Daniel said, this night your kingdom will be stripped from your hands. And the Medes and the Persians will overcome you. And even at that moment, Darius was blocking off and redirecting the Euphrates River that ran through the city. And they marched in on that aqueduct. Never got their feet wet. And the city was overthrown in one night. So now Daniel is prime minister under the third ruler, Darius the Mede. Because of his authority. Now let me tell you something. When you gain authority under God, Satan's not going to like that. And he'll do everything that he can to undermine you. When you are growing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man, there's going to be some that's going to be against you. And they will plot against you. Because of Daniel's authority and his ability, he became the object of envy for the pagan princes and statesmen. Psalms 27 4 says, wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy? Some of you have tasted that. You know that. Daniel's enemies became determined. It's going to bring him down. Kick him out. Kill him if we can. They hated him. They wanted him dead. They became so determined to bring him down. But there was a question. How to do it? How can we get to this man? This is the third king he's been under. He is above reproach. It's always the question, what's the best way? Here's the dudes. They're gathered together. They're hashing this out. They're looking for a way. Can't you just imagine their little confab as they begin discussing? How can we do this? And one of them says, let's frame Daniel. Let's forge some letters. Bring them to the king. Let him state that he's committed treason and he's been corresponding with foreign leaders. And he's planning a rebellion against Darius, and he's wanting to overthrow his rule. And one of the others said, nah, there's no use trying that. There's no one in this kingdom that will believe that. Daniel served too long, and he's been too loyal under three kings, Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, and now Darius. Nobody is going to believe a charge like that against him. So another one speaks up. He says, Daniel is in charge of the finances. He has all of the empire's money. Let's charge him with embezzling and dishonesty, misuse of the funds. And another one speaks up and says, that won't stand. There's no dishonesty charge against Daniel that would ever amount to anything. Nobody's going to believe it for a moment. He's handled the funds for three kingdoms. And in all of those reigns, Daniel has been found faithful. There's no error. There's no fault in him. Then a third speaks up. Says there's only one plan that's going to work. And the others perked up. What is it? We're going to have to devise a plan, which by Daniel's loyalty to the king will be brought into collision with his loyalty to his God. We're going to have to make him choose his God over Darius. How can we do that? The others were all in agreement. But all of them were scratching their heads. And one of them that came up with the idea says, do you hear the lions roaring? Said, yeah, we hear that. Well, this is what we can do. We need to persuade Darius to sign a decree that for 30 days, 1 month, no prayer will be made to man or to any god except Darius. That will do it. And they all thought for a second and they said, you know, it will. Yeah, that will work. Because that's the decree that Daniel would never obey. They all agreed this is the best plan. So they hurried off to the court and they began to tell the king that there's some stuff going on here and we're at risk. There's disloyalty within your kingdom. They began to play on his vanity. And they said, there's no king like you. You are so wise. And you are so powerful. You're like God. So let's say that there needs to be a decree. And if you'll issue that decree, and if you'll say that anybody that violates it will be thrown to the lions. And Darius said, okay. What decree? And they said, why don't you make the decree that'll make sure that you're treated like a god in this kingdom? That if anyone prays to any man or to any god but you, for 30 days will be fed to the lions. Listen to me, young man, especially young man. Never underestimate the cunning of Satan and his ability to devise and to deceive. Young lady, you'll find yourselves in the throes of that if you're not careful. Mom and dad, it's there. We need to understand that. Satan is a master. So he came up with this plan and he had fed it just right. Darius had bit the hook and he had swallowed hook, line, and sinker. The decree was written, stamped with the king's own signet ring, posted all over the city in every obvious place, especially around the palace of Daniel and the gardens that surrounded there. They wanted to make sure that Daniel saw it. The next day at dawn, the plotters had concealed themselves out in the garden around Daniel's house. They wanted to see what was going to happen. It's time for the showdown now. We've got our decree, and it's on the board, and everybody knows it. The whole city has seen it. Daniel has seen it. What's he going to do? We got him right where we want him. They knew that every morning, every noon, every evening, it's Daniel's custom that he would go to his window. And he would open the window that opened toward Jerusalem, and he would begin to cry out and pray to his God, the God of the Hebrews. The night is past. The moment is fast coming. The sun begins to touch with life the beauty of the Euphrates River and the hanging gardens of Nebuchadnezzar and the brown palaces that stand so majestic. The 100 gates of bronze that are a part of the great wall that's around the city, they begin to gleam with the glint of the sunshine. The window still closed. They begin to fret. They begin to wonder what's going on here. And they become afraid. What if our plan fails? One of them said, who would have thought that old man would lose his courage to pray over something like this? I guess he heard the lions roaring and he weighed it in the balances. And he knew that the pit was deep and dark, and he became afraid. There was too much for him. And it scared him prayerless. But before anybody else could even speak a word, the window flings open. And the old statesman looks around and kneels down and spreads out his hand toward Jerusalem. And he lifts his voice, O God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, hear me. His voice echoes across the garden. That one act. Listen to me, young person. That one act clothed Daniel with immortality. That one act set his name forever. As long as the river of time flows down the stream of that magnificent influence that flows from this man called Daniel, that life will be known throughout the world. That name will be heralded among Christians, believers. The angels cry, "Come Caesar, come Alexander, come Suleiman, come Napoleon, come all you conquerors of history and bow down before a man who is greater than you all." Everything to lose. The pit standing before him. Yet this statesman had the gut and gall to open up that window and cry out to his God like he had done every other day under three kings. Young person, senior citizen sitting in this building, mom or dad, especially you, Dad. Your place in the eternal history of heaven will not be determined by your exploits on some athletic field, your cooked meals, the money that you have in the bank, or how many friends you had on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat. Or the myriad other ones that I don't even know anything about. See, all the kids were on Facebook until the adults got on there. So they went over to Twitter, and now all the adults are going to Twitter. So all the kids are going over to Snapchat. Snapchat. Isn't that what I said? Oh. Well, Snapjack. I am so intellectual when it comes to that that sometimes my thoughts get in my way. I don't even know how to snap. Or tweet. I don't know none of that stuff. I barely can Facebook. And just as I get good on that, they all leave me. But there's something to be said. Because it doesn't matter how many followers you have. That's not important. Your place in heavenly history books will be determined by what you stood for. How faithfully you stood for God. And what impact you had for God on this earth. That will cement you in the history books of time. Beyond anything else. Daniel could have said on this occasion, and we do it. We all do it from time to time. He could have said, you know, I can stop praying for just 30 days. Three times a day I prayed for 30 years. Openly. I know God would forgive me for just 30 days, it'd be okay. He could have said, I can't stop praying. I just won't go to the window anymore. I'll go in my closet. I'll do it privately. There's a lot of things he could have said. But it's not what Daniel said or Daniel did. He opened the window just like he had been doing. I love it. Don't you just love it? All of his enemies, so that the king, Satan himself, so that the whole world could hear him. And probably louder than he had ever prayed before. He begins to call out to God. Because he was praying from that moment to this. All down through time, that prayer flowed. Because Daniel had something to say to you this morning. He had something to say to me. Yeah, he was arrested. You better believe it. They marched down. The king didn't like it. The king was nervous. The king was reluctant. He may have even asked his right-hand man, is there any way I can get out of this? No, you signed the decree. He broke it to the pit. So they took Daniel down to the pit, threw him in. No questions asked. Threw him in the lion's pit. The king went to his chamber. And the Bible says this troubled king spent the night fasting and praying. This pagan king named Darius, he knew what kind of man that Daniel was. And he knew how great a God that he served. So he spent the night praying and fasting, calling Daniel's name before the God of heaven. The next morning, as soon as the sun started peeking above the horizon, the king ran down the hallway, literally ran, calling out as he went. Daniel chapter 6, verse 20. O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? One of the greatest sounds that he had ever heard. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like that. But there was a moment in my life. I guess I dreamed that the rapture took place and everybody was gone. But me. And I'm laying in my bed and I'm literally sweating. I was trying to speak and my mouth was so dry, so tight, that finally I got the words out because I knew if Mama was still there, I'm okay. I said, Mama, are you there? In just a second, Mom said, what do you want? And I said, whew. I made it. I'm okay. Oh, Daniel, was your God that you serve so continually was he able? And that call comes back from the bottom of the pit. Daniel chapter 6, verse 22. My God sent an angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me. Woo! That's the God that we serve. immediately looked around to the guards and said, get over here and get him out. Get him out of that pit now. And Daniel was taken out of the den and lifted to an even greater and higher honor. Right there, he said, you're going to be next to me. And we're going to serve your God. The story might have had another ending, because it could have pleased God to let the lions kill Daniel. There was no guarantee that they wouldn't. That would have made no difference in the greatness of the stand that Daniel made. That's what I want you to understand. Although he was delivered from all intents and purposes, Daniel at that moment had offered up his life for his conscience, for his principles, for his God. I don't know that you'll ever be called on to stand. The Christians in Iraq and Iran, Northern Africa, they're being asked to stand on their principles, on their conscience, on their God. And some of them are meeting death. I don't know that you ever will. But if so, I hope you stand. Greater courage, greater faithfulness has no man than this, that he would lay down his life for his own soul. Daniel could have took the easy way out, but it would have cost him an eternity. Great honor is bestowed upon this man. Honor by the king and honor by God. Psalms 25:14 says, the secret of the Lord is with them that fear him. For Daniel is perhaps for no other personality in all of the Old Testament. Suddenly the curtain of the future was drawn back. And God gave this man a peek into the end time events. Second Chronicles 16:9 says, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are loyal to him. Daniel, this man greatly beloved. You know, an angel said that about Daniel twice. In Daniel chapter 10, verses 11 and verse 19, an angel from heaven said, man greatly beloved, when looking at Daniel. Suddenly he sees the whole cyclorama of world history. Kingdoms rising and falling and disappearing. Strange conquerors trampling other conquerors down. Rams with two horns stomping a goat. The beast like a bear, and the beast like a leopard that has wings, and the bear that's like a lion, and the beast with iron teeth that devours and stamps the residue in pieces. He saw earthly thrones and them that sat upon them. But also he saw the Ancient of Days upon his throne. The end of these overwhelming visions, Daniel fainted. It was too much for him. He was so astonished by all the things that he saw that he could not fully understand, and it literally took everything out of him, and he fell down. But God steps in at that moment. And it was our text for this message. Daniel chapter 12, verse 13. Go your way until the end. You will rest. And then at the end of days, you will rise again to receive the inheritance that's set aside for you. How would you like an angel to step into your bedroom tonight and tell you that? You're going to go your way until the end. You're going to rest, but one day you're going to rise up because you got an inheritance waiting on you. That's shouting territory if I've ever been upon it. So we leave this man called Daniel standing in his inheritance, and the light of heaven is shining upon his face. Daniel has that place of glory and future happiness. Daniel chapter 12, verse 13. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of heaven, and those who lead many to righteousness will shine like the stars forever and ever. You want a place in the inheritance like Daniel? Then lead many to Christ. Bring many to that place where they surrender all that they are. As we prepare to come before his table and have a time of communion, please understand that even at this moment, you can ask God to come into your heart.